Mari Forth.
I'm Sarah Carradine, podcasting from Aora, Sydney.
And this is Crime Scene, the true crime review podcast where we get to the heart of how true crime stories are told. You can get this podcast along with all the other fantastic reality TV content by subscribing to robhasawebsite.com/rehapupsfeed. That's robhasawebsite.com/rehapupsfeed.
We'd love it if you would subscribe to our dedicated feed. Please go to robhasawebsite.com/crimefeed. You'll get your true crime on Tuesdays. If you've already subscribed, thank you so much. You can also leave us a five-star review, five stars only. Like Robin Vaughan, the RV, who writes, "True crime review is genius." Thank you very much. We think so ourselves. Never thought about listening to people review the properties, but this is such a good idea. I love Mari and Sarah's take on the different properties. Can't wait to hear more. Oh, thank you, Robin.
And we also got one from Virgo Queen, who writes, "Love a good crime. I've known Mari for years, but I love listening to her in her element, and Sarah's accent is music to my ears." Sarah, I think we have another one as well.
We do. Events by Ashanta also got in on the act. Nice bit of cross promotion there, Ashanta. Well done. You see, everybody, you can get a shout out for your business as long as it's not an MLM. They write, "Love this podcast. My cousin Regina got me listening to you guys, and I've been loving the content. Thanks for all the coverage." Well, thanks, Ashanta. Thanks, Virgo Quinn, and thanks, Robin. And they all know that you don't have to be frugal with stars. You know, you can give as many as you like, and they all spent five stars on us. Mari, what did we watch this week?
This week, we watched American Nightmare on Netflix. It was directed by Bernadette Higgins and Felicity Morris, who co-directed The Tinder Swindler. And that makes a lot of sense to me. And speaking of swindlers,
yes,
we have with us a returning guest and good friend of the pod. You heard him on Our Father, Eat the Rich, and Take Care of Maya. It's Jason Reed. Hey, Jason.
Hey, Jason.
I think I might have to leave the podcast now. I'll just call a swindler on the podcast.
You're a vocal swindler. You swindle people out of their five-star reviews over on your very good podcast.
Okay, I'll take that turnaround of an insult. Mari, Sarah, thank you so much for having me on. I can honestly say this podcast has led to the most, like, my most varied of watchings of things I never would have watched. With all the properties you listed, every time I come away doubting our institutions of healthcare, of policing, of media, of everything. So you guys,
finances.
Yes. So you guys, you know, of all the podcasts I've ever guested on, make me think the most when I come on this podcast.
Yeah, we keep you up at night.
Yeah, for sure. Yes. You got me looking sideways at cops and then doctors on the regular.
Well, we always say, look, this is really tough. This is very difficult stuff. Yeah, Jason, that's who we want.
Like, you're so lucky you're not like pigeonholed. You're not like Matt, where we call him for like the like the weird bondage death. He kept getting that, those type of stuff. You know, you got a good smorgasbord going on. So,
Listen, I didn't cry as much.
Child murders and child molestation.
Yeah, I didn't cry as much here as when I did Take Care of Maya. So that's, I'm thankful you guys didn't give me the ultimate tearjerker like last time.
True. Yes. Oh, that's very true. Before we start, we'd like to let you know the film and our discussion deal in part with sexual assault. If that's not for you today, we'll see you next week. Here are some resources which we will link in the show notes.
In Australia, you can seek support for sexual assault, family, and domestic violence at 1-800-RESPECT. That's 1-800-737-732.
And in the U.S., you can call the National Sexual Assault Hotline at 1-800-656-4673 or go to www.rain.org. That's www.rainn.org. Okay, to the crime. In March 2015, Denise Huskins was kidnapped from the home of her boyfriend, Aaron Quinn, in Vallejo, California. She was held for 48 hours and raped twice by her captor. The Vallejo Police Department and the FBI first decided that Aaron had killed Denise. When she was returned to the home of her father, they then decided that the kidnapping was a hoax staged by Huskins, and Huskins was labeled the real Gone Girl by the media, eager to fall in line with the narrative spun by law enforcement. After a home invasion and attempted sexual assault in Dublin, California, police raided the home of Matthew Mueller and turned up more evidence of other crimes. Detective Misty Caruso of Southlake Tahoe PD in California connected evidence in Mueller's house to Denise's kidnap and assault. Mueller was sentenced to 40 years in prison for robbery, kidnap, and rape. In 2016, Denise and Aaron sued the city of Vallejo for defamation. They settled out of court for $2.5 million. None of the officers involved in the case were disciplined. And despite both Denise and Aaron reporting there were three kidnappers, the FBI has asserted that Mueller worked alone and closed the case. Okay. Whew. Sarah and Jason. Mm-hmm. My first question is, I knew about this case, so I was really interested to see the documentary. My first question to you, Jason, is, did you know about this case beforehand?
I had no idea. So you guys talked to me about this before the thing even came out. I was like, I had no idea. And then the thing came out, and I started hearing rumblings like, I'm going to talk about it. I want to hear the spoilers. So I went into this totally blind, not knowing what I was getting into, which was interesting because it seems like the property itself is trying to lead you in many different directions.
Uh-huh.
Until you finally get to the real direction. You're like, okay, wow. Like, you're kind of mind blown by the end. Uh-huh. It was definitely quite a few twists and turns in there, and definitely some interesting revelations that came out, you know, toward the end of the property.
Same question for you, Sarah. Did you know about the case beforehand, and just overall thoughts of the property?
No, I didn't. As soon as we decided to cover it, I thought, I don't want to hear anything. And yes, Jason, I listened to an interview with the filmmakers, which we'll talk about later in the podcast. And they talked about the construction being, we wanted to lead you through as it happened, was their idea. So you'll notice that Aaron's was speaking in the present tense when he was telling the story. Denise was speaking in the present tense when she was telling her story. And the use of the interrogation footage of Aaron, it's like, what were the police confronted with? The very first thing we see is body cam footage. So I think this was great to watch knowing nothing. I never thought Denise was dead. I'm not sure if the filmmakers want us to think she's dead, but we see her at the end of episode one. So there's an idea of where is she, what's happened. I was pretty sure she'd still be alive. My question mark would be on the title of the documentary. Filmmakers, I love this. The title could be anything, could be absolutely anything. But that's probably my only quibble. What about you, Murray? You knew about it. So how did you find the coverage?
Yes, I knew about this case going in. I had saw the trailer and I was so excited. I was like, yep, we gotta cover this. We gotta get Jason on. And I am so glad that we did this because I really liked how this was produced. I liked how it was presented. And even knowing the case, again, this is the highest kudos you're going to get from me. Like, knowing the case, going into a property, and me thinking that the property was so well laid out that it included all of the pertinent information of the case. It presented the case in a way that I thought was compelling. I thought this was really good. And like you said, Sarah, it starts off with, you know, Aaron's 911 call. It can't be a true crime documentary if we don't start off with the 911 call. And it's so funny because it kind of parallels when we watched Murder in Boston. It's kind of funny, you know, that the parallels between that husband making that 911 call and this boyfriend making the 911 call. So I liked how they did it. I didn't feel tricked or lied to, kind of like when we did The Girl in the Picture. And I was like, I am so confused about this timeline and what these witnesses are saying, or I Just Killed My Dad, how that was also kind of misleading narrative with the talking head. So I thought they were just perfectly unraveling information in a step-by-step, very methodical way. I didn't feel like we were being manipulated at all, because we have to start with episode one, which is entitled The Boyfriend. And this is where we completely get Aaron's side of the story. Basically, we get his 911 call, we get his recollection of the events, and basically everything that he's going through at the beginning of the case. Jason, what did you think of episode one? And Aaron as a talking head leading us through this.
So, you know, just coming into it blind, I said, first thing, I hear Aaron's call, I'm like, man, this guy is really calm for something that just had his girlfriend kidnapped. And I was like, I mean, immediately side-eyed Aaron, like, what you do, Aaron? What's the real deal here, Aaron? But then we do see the talking heads. He's not like behind bars. He's not like, you know, so I was like, okay, so there's more to this story here than what I may think. But I enjoyed the perspectives of everyone here. Mari, you pointed out how the property is laid out. I do love that as well. You guys have, you know, have had a grudge against things that, you know, that sequence out its things in different parts. But I thought this was perfect, because like you said, it's got Aaron's side, Denise's side, and then it's not even sides. It's like, what happened? What happened from this perspective? What happened this with Denise's perspective? And then resolution as a third episode. I thought that was brilliantly done. Fantastic. Aaron as a character, Aaron as a person, I was like, and then almost, not immediately, but very close to immediately, you start feeling bad for Aaron. You're like, okay,
yeah,
this kid's getting railroaded. He's getting, you know, he's basically being told that he's a monster by Detective freaking Mustard, like a freaking Clue board game. and so you almost immediately feel bad for him. You're like, okay, so I don't anymore think this guy did something wrong. Now, what did Denise do? And then almost immediately when you meet Denise, you're like, okay, well, something else is going on here. So it's that kind of fast change of my judgment that makes me stay invested in this type of story. Because, you know, one minute I'm thinking one thing, the next minute I'm thinking another thing. And then something else comes out and hits me from the side. So it was that kind of twisty turny thing that really got me to stay invested in the whole property, you know, in the whole three parts. At the end of those three parts, I was like, that's it? You don't have any more for me? You don't have any more information? So when something can do that to me by the end of a 2-hour property, you know, they got me hooked.
Sarah, what about you? What did you think of episode one, Aaron's stories, even like maybe even the reenactments?
Well, yes, it's always the boyfriend, it's always the husband, except when it isn't. And far be it from me to defend law enforcement in any way, apart from Misty is mother. But you can think it's the boyfriend, but would you like to investigate?
Would you like to do your job?
Let's get to the end, okay? Are you about to talk about the cell phone? Because
cell phone. When they're like, they put the phone in airplane mode. Why?
I put Aaron's phone in airplane mode, because, even though, like, he said the kidnappers have my cell phone number and they have contacted me.
That's almost blatantly not wanting to solve the case. Blatantly being like, yeah, no, I don't think so. His ringtone's annoying. Can we put that in airplane mode so we don't have to hear it or something? Like, what was the justification? What's going on? So it's that moment that I was just like, as they're detailing all the ways that law enforcement failed everyone in this case, everyone from Denise, Aaron, to you know, to the victims of Matthew Mueller, the fourth hence, and Matthew Mueller himself, in a way, because that guy's got a lot going on, and he needed to be captured.
We're jumping to the end, but he, on Mare Island, he was the Mare Island peeper. And the good citizens of Mare Island figured out who he was by following him home and gave police the information. Crimes like this are always escalation. So he escalates from peeping to home invasion to trusting someone up and telling them he's going to rape them but not doing it, and then on to the sexual assaults. This man could have been stopped by law enforcement at peeping
several times.
And at various other moments. I mean, other victims that we realize in this first episode, Jane Huskins, Denise's mother, when Detective Mustard says to her, oh, well, girls that have been sexually assaulted as young girls will often act out for attention. Do you think that's what she's doing here? Man. Jane Huskins is telling us this. Man. And she says really mildly, I was aghast. I thought, aghast!
I see where Denise gets her calm demeanor from. Yes. Like, that's all that, you got? I was
that
aghast.
Matt Mustard is still alive when he said that to Denise's mother, Jane, who we just love. So I don't have a problem with police looking at the husband, the wife, the girlfriend, the boyfriend. No problem at all. But there were several things that could have been investigated. And as Jason says, this cell phone, and not only did they have it turned off, despite him saying the kidnappers have texted me, and we already know that one text went through, which was asking for the $15,000, but also, and I didn't know, I thought you could ping cell phones to find out where they currently are. The telecom giant, whoever it was, located the cell phone, which was trying to ring Aaron, to within several feet of the place that Denise was being held. Yes, yeah. Thank you. I tried to get, no, yes, exactly.
Yeah. I just want to make it clear.
So she could have been saved from at least the second assault had they done that.
Yeah. So, again, I want to try and stay in episode one here.
Yes, let's stay in episode one. I thought Henry Lee was very, very interesting. Henry Lee is the only person in this entire documentary who says sorry. Henry Lee is a crime reporter from the San Francisco Chronicle. Mm-hmm. He said it was a complete media circus. He also said it's always the boyfriend. And hilariously, his talking heads are all done in a car. Because he says, I'm never in an office. I'm always in a car.
Talking over his shoulder. I was like, who is this guy? Like,
this is Henry Lee from the San Francisco
Chronicle.
It was
so gimmicky. He was like, you know, I'm a crime reporter. I almost live in my car. So because of that, we're going to do all my interviews in my car. I was like, okay.
I sort of loved it. I mean, he's a ham.
He gets the points off for me because you chose to go that direction. Be a little hammy with it. I was like, that's kind of out of place here, I thought. To have this story about such a serious crime and then be like, wouldn't it be fun if he shot him in his car because he says he lives in his car? Get it? I was like, okay. All right.
But however, the only one to express any regret, he talks about his deep regret at the way, not only himself, he apologizes for the whole of the media. So I found him very interesting. Of course, we talked to the parents. There's that level of peril, even though, as I say, I never quite thought that she was dead, but that she's certainly in peril and they don't know where she is. And I thought this was beautifully built by the filmmakers from the material that they had. And just at the point when I shouted at the screen, leave, to Aaron in a prison outfit, which they put him in, because they say, sorry, we didn't have any other clothes. You don't have a jogging suit? You don't have an old jogging suit in the Lost and Found? You put that boy directly into prison clothes, and then you tell me that you had an open mind?
They got me Hamburglar pants. Like, I didn't know those are still a real thing. Like, they give you like the black and white striped zebra pants.
I really love that they use the archival footage here of not only his interrogation, but of them like searching like the waters and the fields and stuff like that for her, and all of the news footage and stuff like that. Meanwhile, juxtaposition with his interrogation. And this is where we've seen so many of these interrogations just go left. Like, here is a reminder. It is legal for the police to lie to you during interrogations. Do not trust the police in interrogations. Get a lawyer right away.
He waited until he got a lie detector test from the FBI, who was
and he failed miserably.
I'll be on a reasonable doubt you failed.
I have never seen anyone fail a lie detector as
why are you poorly taking a polygraph to begin with. They are not admissible in court. They do nothing for you. Taking a polygraph, even if you pass it, even if you pass it, if they think it's you, they're not going to tell you. Like, do not take a polygraph. And we're not trying to help criminals. We're trying to protect people like this. Aaron thought that he could trust the police.
He wanted to find Denise. He had this terrifying ordeal where they were woken up with bright lights shining in their faces and laser dots on their bodies. Mm-hmm. Three entirely black-clad men who said they were in wetsuits. I mean, extraordinary. It's already becoming quite bizarre. Mm-hmm. His girlfriend had to zip tie him. He had to have the blacked out swim goggles put on him, and she is taken away, and he cannot get himself free. And they're drugged, and he can't get himself free. And then as soon as he gets himself free, he finds that the bed is surrounded by markup tape, and he has a message saying, "Do not. We have a camera," and there was. They'd installed a camera in the corner of his room. "Do not leave this square. We will see and hear everything that you do. Do not call the police. Get us $15,000. The fact that he even called the police in his terror, decided that he had to do that because he could only get $3,500. Mm-hmm. No wonder he was so calm.
I mean, he said this so terror. His terror. He was like, "Hey, so somebody like took my girlfriend. Where she's at? Can you guys like come and investigate or something?"
Bugged. And then, of course, he spoke to the police. Of course, he gave them his clothes. Of course, he put on the Hamburglar pants because he was told to. He thought, because you know he's a middle class white boy, so he thought, and his brother's in law enforcement. His brother's actually an FBI agent. He thought, if I tell the police what happened, they will investigate and go and rescue Denise. So it wasn't for hours and hours and hours and hours till after the polygraph that he said, lawyer.
Yeah. Yeah. And just watching these cops lie, he's like, Mr. Mustard here, Detective Mustard, saying that, "Oh, we found blood in the apartment." "Did you, sir?"
It was Detective Mustard with the bullshit in the police department.
It was.
That's who did it.
Yes. Yeah. And it's actually interesting. Once a person, and he was, they told him he wasn't in custody and he can leave any time. Mm-hmm. If you're told that, just leave. Because he didn't, because he wanted to find Denise.
Right.
But as soon as somebody says lawyer, the police can't talk to you anymore. And it's fascinating. He says the word lawyer, and the first thing the FBI agent says is, what? What did you say?"
Yeah, he's like, "Whoa, whoa, whoa. I mean, we don't need lawyers involved. And then he says it again, he's like, "All right, fine. All right."
Yeah, so as soon as he says lawyer, and they're all frozen because, like, they know they can't say another word.
Yeah.
But there's the instinct is to say to him, "Oh, you don't need a lawyer," but they know they can't quite do it.
I thought the interrogation footage was quite interesting because it almost, like, you know, I know it wasn't, but it almost felt like a reenactment. It almost felt like it was like, you know,
because it was just so absurd.
It was so absurd with him, you know, with the crying in the corner, like, "What the F is going on?" Like him, you know, just all the scenes almost felt like a movie. It almost felt like you see in a TV show. Because if it wasn't so real, it would be so unbelievable. But I thought that was interesting. And I love to talk about mess in reality TV.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron, my man, what are you doing? Like, first of all, you're hooking up with Andrea in the workplace, but then you drag Denise, who was also in the same workplace, and you got a three-way thing going on. You with Denise, you also talking to Andrea. Aaron, I hate to say karma's a bitch, but I mean, damn, karma drives a big bus, man.
And she's got everybody's address.
Yeah, karma got you good, bro.
Yeah.
But damn, Aaron, yeah.
He was honest about that when they said, "How was your relationship?" He said, "We'd been having some problems because she found some text messages on my phone to my ex, Andrea." Like, he says it straight up. He gives them the quote-unquote motive.
The motive. And then when they bring Andrea in, Andrea...
I say, "Andrea, what's your story? what you got going on? I know, Andrea... you're probably not Denise's biggest fan. What's up?"
Andrea was probably like, "Good riddance," because in that police interrogation, they're like explaining, like, they're asking, like, "Oh, we're asking about your ex, Aaron. How did you break up? Was it like on good terms or bad terms?" She was like, "Very bad terms. Very bad."
She didn't want to cheat in the first place.
She cheated on him. Yeah. And then we get Aaron saying she cheated on him, which makes sense because, like, he's still hung up begging to get with her. Mm-hmm. And she was just like, "Yeah." And she was like, then when I would say hi to Denise at the workplace, she would kind of give me the cold shoulder. And that's when I realized that you know, she, you know, that she didn't, she, they were probably in a relationship together, but
and that's yeah, I was like, so what did you do then, Andrea?
Right.
And well, the thing that makes it just so bizarre, more bizarre than the wetsuits and the red square and the black dark goggles, is the kidnapper who talked, who turns out to be Muller, says, oh, we thought this was supposed to be for Andrea.
Yeah, you gotta keep your records up to date, right?
Like, the peeper had not updated his blonde lady who goes into Aaron's house records. Yep.
But you get when you peep from across the street. You can't tell one blonde lady from the other. I guess.
No, snap. That's true. That's so true.
All blonde ladies look the same. Come on.
Yeah. And so let's move from one, like, Aaron's story. It's like Jason said, it's just so incredibly unbelievable. Like the way that Aaron is telling the story, you could see why it'd be like, you waited how many hours to report and all this stuff. It just seemed to get more unbelievable. Then we get to episode two, and this is completely from Denise's point of view. Episode two, stunning. Yeah. Very hard to listen to because she details her capture. She details her rapes. Very, very hard to listen to. But even that, like, I don't want to seem like this is not a Believe Women podcast, but even her story sounded like, what? Because who acts like this?
Well, okay. And then, you know, I hate to judge, because that's what I was doing. I was judging in the moment.
Yeah.
Like, as we see Denise just stroll up to her dad's house, like, bebop up to dad's house. We hear her talk on the phone very calmly. Talk on the proof of life video.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, hey, you know, my first concert was Blink 182. I mean, you know, what was the other one?
I'm kidnapped, but I'm fine.
Oh, yeah. We didn't even talk about that. The proof of life and all of that came while Aaron was in the police station. Sorry, keep going.
So it's like, you know, I was just like, Denise, what's going on, girl? But then as we get, what's going on, girl? But as we get further into it, I'm like, oh, okay. this was nuts.
I mean, it's interesting. When we talk later to Tracy in part three, who's one of the survivors of Muller, and he said to her, apparently, I'm sorry, I know that this will stay with you for a very, very long time. I thought, yeah, he wants that. He wants to stay, he and others like him, wants to stay in his victim's head. Denise is walking up to her father's front door, probably not able to believe that she's been released, not knowing when the videotapes of her assault might be released, not knowing if he's coming back to get her. He now has Aaron's address and her father's address. Mm-hmm. And the stunning thing for me with these filmmakers is part two. So part one, there's intercutting, not frantic intercutting, but we see Aaron today, Aaron then, TV news reporters. We've got Henry Lee driving around in his car. Mm-hmm. And in part two, we have 20 uninterrupted minutes of Denise simply telling her story, sitting in on a sofa, and I was riveted.
Yeah, she details what happens when she's driven off from their home, her just being blindfolded with those goggles on, her being taken to a secondary location. Of course, like we said, she's raped twice, but not only is she raped, but like he says that she has to look like she's interested in it, which is like legit. It is kind of like the movie Gone Girl and the book, if you read the book like I have. And so like it's almost astounding that it's almost like Muller knew what the cops might think if he did things a certain way. You know what I'm saying? Like it's like he almost perfectly like laid it out so that this could be the case where they wouldn't even catch him.
That dude is fascinating in his depravity, right?
Yeah.
Because like he has this elaborate setup for Aaron and Denise, but then earlier and later crimes are so basic and rudimentary, where it's just like, this guy can't be pinned down with like an MO. Like, he can't, like, he's never consistent in anything. Like, this whole air thing was just the most elaborate thing you think of. I set up a camera. I took your vitals. We never really even understand why he took vitals, why he did all this stuff, why even Aaron was targeted in the first place, or why Andrea was targeted. So many questions that still linger. And it's just like, you know, he's so advanced at one moment and then so, you know, basic at the next.
Rudimentary,
you know, he asks for money and then just totally drops it and doesn't even ask about money again. But that might be like, that might be the bipolar nature of
what was going on with
Mueller in the first place. So
yeah, I think that might be
an explanation. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, thankfully we don't get a lot about Mueller, which is how Murray and I like it. We don't talk to him. We just get some photographs and some basic information. He was in the Marines. He says he has Gulf War syndrome, PTSD. Which
I've never heard of.
I mean one of the other things that we can, you know, talk about in one of the issues that gets revealed here is like how we take care of our vets after they come home, right? Because this is something that also the system failed Matthew Mueller in this way too.
Very true.
We get so many systemic failures in this one property here. It's just kind of like, it's really bizarre.
Gulf War illness, which are symptoms of like 250,000 U.S. veterans have been found to suffer from Gulf War illness, and it significantly reduces the ability of their white blood cells to make energy. And it can include muscle aches, joint pain, dizziness, memory lapses, headaches, fatigue, and insomnia. And they think that it was caused by exposure to the chemical agent sarin. So, like sarin gas. Yeah. So
you add that into PTSD and
please
look after your disorder. Veterans, please.
Yeah.
Please.
So his actions are so ridiculous. Let's be real, they're ridiculous. That it makes both of their stories sound ridiculous, because there are points where he's like sending stuff to the police like, no, Aaron didn't do it. No, here's a picture of the gun. I'm real. Like, why
almost
are you
almost confessing and turning himself in at points. It sounds like
he was sending it to Henry Lee. Sending it to Henry Lee, the crime correspondent, who then passed it on to police. But did they look at the you know, where the thing
they
came
from? They
probably
thought it was from Aaron and Denise. Like, they probably thought it was from them, like, you know, perpetrating the hoax even further. Like, they probably totally disregarded it.
Exactly. They didn't. They didn't look at the IP addresses. They didn't look at none of the email.
Yes. Yeah. And I mean, this is another strangeness, because he constructs his crime in such a bizarre way that the telling of it sounds so strange that the victims are not believed. Right. So on one hand, you think, is this cleverness? But then on the other hand, when the press, the media, the police turn against this couple and say it's a big hoax, they're hoaxes, he says, no, I did it. So it's like, do you want to get away with it, or do you want to claim it? And it's like this very strange waving between the two.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure his own mind, he went back and forth several times. That's just kind of how his mental illness affected him in that way.
Yeah. And even with like, with Denise being let go, why did he let her go? Like, all we know, you know what I'm saying? Like, maybe because Sarah said that there's always escalation, right? And this guy, I mean, this sounds exactly like how the Golden State Killer escalated between peeping, rapes, and then it gets to murder. I think he just, luckily, they caught him before he got to the murder stage, because, you know, he did the two sexual assaults and, you know, Aaron's phone wasn't picking up. That's what it was. I think he wasn't getting any more responses from Aaron. So he kind of just like,
well,
let her go.
Stopped responding to him, because he like Aaron told him that he only get like 3,500 at the moment.
Right.
And they didn't hear anything else back.
Yeah.
And then apparently, you know, they could have
in the calls,
the call
something
from the airplane mode would have helped him, but he stopped responding for a while. I think it's just part of the mania. Like, you know,
in a
moment he's like, oh, maybe I'll just let her go. And then just did like,
yeah. And this weird, I'm the kindly sexual assaulter.
Yes.
You know, you don't want to meet my friends. Yeah. I'm the kindly one. And so, and he drives her to her father's house because it's a media circus over at Aaron's house. And yes, then there would presumably be a pause, and then the next time it would be a death. And at one point, Denise says, what needs to happen to any woman to be believed?
Yeah.
And there's a pause where we all fill in the blank, which is she needs to be dead. That's when that's when she'll be believed.
Exactly. Yeah. And so
listen, I don't want to, I probably shouldn't say this, but because she is who she is, if she had been dead, it would have been a big deal.
A big deal. But you then, and then it would have been Aaron. They probably would have stuck it on Aaron.
Definitely.
And he would have continued. So very, very good point. And so by the end of episode two, even Denise is like, you know, she's back. She's shaken up. At first, she doesn't tell the police about her sexual assaults, you know, which.
Because he said he'd release the tapes if she did.
Yeah, exactly. But not even like 12 hours between her being released, do they go and they do that public statement. They haven't even talked to her, okay? The Vallejo PD have not even talked to Denise. They just hear that she's released in Huntington Beach. 12 hours later, they do a press conference and they're like, this is a hoax. Denise Huskin and Aaron, they wasted all these resources, just
blundered.
They're insulted. They're insulted that she would dare not talk to them and re-victimize herself by going over all the horrific things that happened to her. Give her some time, some space, man. Like, for first of all, like, gosh. And then just to come out and just drag her like that, knowing, you know, this isn't, yeah, it was 2015. It wasn't 2024, where where if you do this in 2024, you are dragged and trolled and to hell. But even in 2015, it was bad. You know, not probably levels of right now bad, but it was still bad in 2015 to come out and basically accuse this woman. No, not even basically. They did accuse this woman of fabricating.
They said
this,
it as fact.
Yeah, of lying and just basically sicking the media and social media on these people. It's so damaging to people and so inconsiderate and irresponsible of these people that are supposed to uphold the law to do this to these citizens, whatever they thought happened. It was irresponsible and should be criminal, honestly.
And when she finally comes in to talk to them, well, she comes in because she wants to get a rape kit, which they call something else.
And they wouldn't let her do it until they came and talked to
her. And then she sat there for hours telling exactly the same story that Aaron had told, having not reunited with Aaron in the meantime, provably.
Their lawyers made sure that they stayed apart. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, can we give a shout out to the lawyers?
Those lawyers were great.
Specifically Dan Russo. He was a star. He's like, I believe the kid, but nobody in North effing America is gonna believe this kid.
Yeah.
Like, this guy's a star. I love that guy.
And another thing that, like, if you can afford good lawyers, then this is what happens.
That's
you
a
know?
Privilege, but yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. But yeah, so for all of that to happen, and then for us to get to episode three, where we get the 911 call of the attempted break-in, the attempted sexual assault, where luckily a family are able to like fight him off of kidnapping their daughter, and then they're able to trace him back to like Lake Tahoe. This is where we first meet Detective Misty Caruso, and of course, it takes a woman cop to break this, right, Sarah?
A woman cop who became a cop because her friend was sexually assaulted. Mm-hmm. And the cops who dealt with her friend's assault were amazing. And she thought, I want to do that. She was working at Target or Walmart, Safeway. She was working at Safeway at the time. Mm-hmm. And the police who were in charge of her friend's case were amazing and inspired her to become a detective. Now, listen, all cops are bastards. Fuck the police.
But
I don't even like to say that. Misty is mother. Yes, she is absolutely. And this is her first case as detective. So she goes out to this awful home invasion where the father fought off the attacker. The mother hid in a cupboard. Luckily, the daughter was not taken. They solve it pretty quickly. They find out it's Mueller. They go there and they look at the interior of his house, and the hairs on her arm stand up, and she thinks something's very bad here, not just the thing that we attended. And among other things, she finds the goggles, the blacked out goggles. It's basically swim goggles with duct tape over it. And caught in the duct tape is a long blonde hair. And as they start to find more of Mueller's victims, all of his victims are brunettes. So she works tirelessly to go, there is a blonde victim somewhere. Without Misty, where would Aaron and Denise be? And I think they asked that question as well.
Yeah. Jason, thoughts on Misty?
I love Misty. When I was here for Our Father, I said Jacoba 2024, her running mate should be Misty. Jacoba, Misty 2024, put it on the ticket, do it now. Because Misty is a queen. Misty is who you want in your corner when you have been done wrong. She's who you want investigating. She's who you want believing you when something happens in your, because I was glad that we got this kind of positive side to the police force. Cause I mean, up until this point, even more than normal, it's like, take it all down, F them all.
Yeah.
But now we see like a ray of sunshine, a ray of hope with Misty and even her, I don't know if it was her partner or her sergeant or whatever, Miguel was his name.
Miguel is the lieutenant. Yes.
Who is taking the time to do the real work, to do the investigative work that the other people, that freaking Detective Mustard, didn't bother to do. These people are doing the job, the investigation, the tireless, dogged investigation to get answers, to get justice. So it was just a ray of bright light. Seeing Misty in her element, doing her thing. I love the recreations in her house.
Oh, best B-roll ever, where she says, I'm ringing the Vallejo police like an annoying ex-girlfriend. It's just like, she's opening the fridge while she's on the phone. Yeah, she's shopping. She just rings and rings and rings them. How do you not respond to another law enforcement department? Ridiculous. How do you leave them? How do you ghost them? I don't know what on red is, but you know.
Yeah. Go straight to voicemail.
Yeah. Yes. And so I cannot believe, like, think about it. Their case was open and shut. They had him. They had him dead to rights for that one. If she hadn't been like, whose blonde hair is this? Then Misty and Aaron might have never found out, like, who had kidnapped her. They would have probably been, the police were getting ready to sue them for the quote unquote hoax that they think they committed against.
Making a false report. She was she would have been up for 18 months in prison.
Yes. This reminded me so much of Victim Suspect. It really pissed me off a lot.
But when Misty goes, he looks like a normal average guy. I was like, are we looking at this?
Are we looking at
this? Yeah, we look at this.
This man looks like a crazy person. Like, I'd have walked across the street if he passed me by on the street.
I mean, she's the one when they take him out of the house, she's the one that says, oh, I'm just going to, this is all on body cam, I'm just going to take a couple of photos of you. Those photos, this is not a normal. No.
That's exactly what James is like. Those eyes look kind of crazy to me.
Yeah. I mean, we are not psychologists.
Like, I see him like, he did something. Get him somewhere. He did something.
Yes, you're absolutely right. Like, her case, their case, the case before the Dublin PD, completely solved, shut, case closed. But she cannot let this blonde hair go. And also because goggles were not mentioned by any of the victims that they found.
Yes. Yeah. Because this is where, like you guys said, she was unraveling the 2009 cases of him breaking in all around California, the peepings. And it wasn't until she had talked to people who had talked about the peepings, because the peepings were on the same Mare Island, that they're like, oh, kind of like that Gone Girl case. And she was like, wait, what Gone? Girl, okay.
Yeah, it was the owner of the Mustang that was stolen that like tipped her off to that, like kind of just seemingly randomly, like, oh hey, yeah, what about that case, like kind of almost jokingly.
Also, can we say, back in episode 2, the first time she was interviewed, Denise said it was a white car, because when she was released, she could see out of the bottom of her goggles, mm-hmm. and it sounded like a Mustang.
Like, ridiculous.
And what was the car that was used? It was a white Mustang. You couldn't run that through and just have a look?
See where the stolen white...
I mean, I'm sure there's thousands of them. Nope. I'm sure there's thousands of them.
But do your job. Yeah.
Job, and, please.
And I just loved when they got to just the unraveling of how the police did absolutely nothing. They start just telling us all of the things that the Vallejo PD had done wrong. I was like, yep, this makes sense. And honestly, I would have loved if they've gone a little bit more into the Aaron and Denise suing them. But, you know, it's okay. We got the words on the screen, because it wouldn't have been satisfying, because like we said, Mustard gets police officer of the year. Denise and Aaron have to settle outside of court for $2.5 million. When honestly, I'm like,
not enough.
Okay, I would have owned the city of Vallejo.
Not enough money.
And not in the public record. That's my big thing. Mm-hmm. If you settle out of court, yes, I know, like, it's exhausting. But get it on the public record.
Mm-hmm. And Mueller got 40 years. I was like, 40 years? I'm like, nah. Yeah. Put his ass in there for life. Put him under the prison for life.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then this extraordinary little tip. Look, listeners, if you haven't watched it, like, what are you doing listening to us? Mm-hmm. But there are so many twists and turns, including the fact that FBI agent David Sesma, who was present at the interrogation of Denise, used to date Aaron's ex-fiance, Andrea. And when this is revealed, the FBI investigates that. At least they investigated something. They investigated that and find his involvement, and I quote, unproblematic.
But come on, they didn't really investigate it. They're just
right.
Like,
I was about to say,
it was like when you ask someone, like, do you have this in the back at a store? And then, like, walk in the back, like, yeah, let me go check. They sit in the back on their phone for 5 minutes. Like, they come out like, yeah, we don't have it. But, you know, in that moment, I was like, all right, I'm again looking at Andrea like, you sure you don't have anything to tell us, Andrea?
The thing is, people know people. It's fine. It's completely benign. I believe it's completely benign. But you have to say, FBI agent David Sesma, you have to say, oh, I can't come in on this case because I used to date Andrea. We're not saying that there was anything wrong. We're just saying you can't do that. You have to, whatever the judges do, recuse yourself.
You can't give benefit of the doubts in this case. Yeah. That's so tight like this. And the fact that there are thousands of FBI agents, just get this guy off of this one.
Aaron's brother, for example. But and also, listen, a very good tip from Jason. There's never anything in the back. It's never in the back. Because shops want to sell things, it's on the floor. It's never in the back.
Well, as a retail vet, I can tell you, it's in the back sometimes.
Yeah.
And depending on how you speak to us,
we might find it
and we might not. Okay.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
All right. What is everybody's final thoughts on American Nightmare before we get into our ratings? I will start with you, Jason.
Very gripping. You know, I was riveted beginning to end. Even the parts that were tough to hear were riveting to me. As Sarah said, I'm still not sure about the title. I'm like,
yeah.
Doesn't really make a lot of sense. But other than that, I had a good time. I had an interesting time with this. I was thoroughly intrigued throughout the whole thing. So I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah. Sarah, how about you?
Look, same. I mean, I have the highest praise for this docuseries title. It's so generic. That's the problem. I think there's been enough buzz around it that people will watch it. But if someone was scrolling through, it could be, you know, American anything. The filmmakers are not Americans, so it may be that they may be cleverer than me about sort of international releases and stuff.
It's true crime and like American, like it people love that.
I think the nightmare
is what happened to her, you know what I'm saying? And then the nightmare
and the aftermath. Yeah. It could be just called American.
Why is it specifically American?
American Terrible Cops.
Apparently.
God.
Apparently that helps spike ratings and stuff on true crime. That's like, that's why like the ID series are all like American. The name of that Family Annihilator, the Chris Watts one, was called like American Family Next Door or something too. Like
that's America, why America, I gotta watch that. That's why, yeah. America.
That's why American Vandal is called American Vandal. One of the best pieces of art you will ever see, everybody. But speaking of good pieces of art, this is just one of my absolute tops. Mari, we've just started the year and we've already got like two excellent top draw documentaries.
Yeah. I mean, just amazing. I feel like it's so funny because I always feel like it's like, oh, are we going on a run of bad stuff? Then are we going on a run of good stuff? You know, but we definitely lucked out so far. And this one was well done. Shout out to the team who directed this. They knocked it out of the park with Tinder Swindler, and I think they knocked it out of the park with this one as well. I'm seeing a lot of buzz about it, so they are doing something right. Horrible name aside. We have some further properties. You can read the book by Denise Huskins and Aaron Quinn called Victim F, From Crime Victims to Suspects to Survivors, published in September 21. Denise and Aaron are actually, they're married now with two beautiful kids. We did see that at the end of the documentary, the docuseries. So that was really good to see. They were finally in that third episode. They were doing their interviews together.
Were you a little shocked that they remained together?
No, trauma bond.
Yeah, exactly.
And they did have something, despite him behaving not well beforehand. The thing was that he acknowledged he wasn't behaving well and he had already promised to go to therapy. So that plus what they went through together, I think. Ray of light, Mari, with the two dear little girls on the beach, I thought. Normally I'm not a fan of that sort of thing, but it was like this ray of light and this life I thought was great. You can also listen to, I referred to it earlier, you can listen to Friend of the Pod, Rebecca Lavoie's podcast, You Can't Make This Up, where she interviews makers of Netflix documentaries. And the latest episode covers American Nightmare and is her conversation with filmmakers Felicity Morris and Bernadette Higgins. I found it absolutely fascinating hearing the thinking behind the construction of the docuseries, which we've hit along the way, and also a few extra details. I will put a link in the show notes to that.
Yes. So, Jason, how many magnifying glasses are you going to rate American Nightmare out of a possible 5?
The story and the way that it was mapped out was so great. I'm going to not even take any stems of magnifying glasses off for the Henry Lee in a car, the terrible name and all that. I'm going to give it the full 5.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Sarah, how many magnifying glasses are you going to rate it?
Fives across the board. It's wonderful. Man, watch it. If you haven't watched it, watch it. What about you, Mari?
Do you remember when it felt like we barely gave out 5s? Now yes. I feel like we're giving them out all willy-nilly, but this is it. Look, you have to give it a 5.
If it's deserved, it has to be a 5. It's like the stars. We don't have a limited number of magnifying glasses. We have as many as we like.
Yes, exactly. So I, too, would give this a 5. I think it has everything. I think it has so much information about the case. It's detailed and laid out in a way that is not only entertaining but informative. It was the easiest watch. I was like, I swear I looked up, episode 1 was done. I was like, what? Episode 2 is done. Episode 3 is done. Like, and each episode was about 40 minutes. Did not feel like it. Did not feel like it at all. Very engaging, very intriguing. Gotta give it a 5. Definitely. Sarah, do you have a recommendation for our listeners?
Yes, I do. A lot of our listeners will already be on this, but in case you've been holding back, True Detective Season 4 with Jodie Foster and Carly Reese. It's set in Ennis, Alaska, starting on the third night of darkness. The darkness in Alaska lasts for about 2 months, so it's a great setting. The whole cast is stellar. Fiona Shaw is one of my favourite actors. She's British, but here she is, not being British, as many British actors have been known to be. And some First Nations Alaskan actors that are new to me, and I loved listening to all of them, watching all of them. It's the story is complex and strange and you don't quite know what's going on, and that's True Detective for you. The production is just visually stunning, and if you've been holding back because you weren't sure, get into it. If you haven't watched the first three seasons, it doesn't matter. It's a completely new story with completely new characters. So you can jump in at season four. I love Jodie Foster. I love Jodie Foster. I've grown up with her. We're about the same age. So, yeah, get into True Detective season four. And what about you, Mari? What have you got to recommend?
First off, I just want to recommend/re-recommend. If you haven't watched Victim Suspect and you haven't listened to our coverage about it, please go watch it. Again, it's so important that we shed light on law enforcement agents basically dismissing victims of sexual assault and even worse, turning them into suspects. So definitely go watch that. That is also on Netflix if you haven't already. And of course, something I know I'm pretty sure we've recommended in our 90 plus episodes, Unbelievable, another movie. This is a dramatized movie about a case, again, in California, where a victim of sexual assault was raped and she told the police. The police basically backed her down into rescinding, or they didn't believe her story, and she got persecuted for it. Meanwhile, it took two women detectives to actually find and locate a serial rapist that was raping, and then I think he eventually murdered somebody in California. So again, two stories that we've already recommended that deal with the same kind of subject matter. If you are up for something that does not deal with this subject matter, which I can understand, randomly I watched Feud on FX. It is the Ryan Murphy produced show. The first season came out like 2 years ago. The second season is about to premiere next week. But the first season was about Bette Davis and Joan Crawford and their feud on the set of Whatever Happened to Baby Jane. For some reason, this kind of tickled that history brain of mine. And I started watching it, and it's just absolutely fantastic. The acting by Jessica Lange and Susan Sarandon is just marvelous in it. And it's a behind the scenes look of how the movie was made, and it's amazing. Next week, season two of Feud is going to be Truman Capote versus the Swans, which tells the story of Truman Capote and his minor feud with the New York socialite elite in like the 1930s. So again, rich white people drama. Jason, I know you have a little bit of experience with that after covering recently, the Gilded Age. Yeah. So if you like the Gilded Age, you'll really love Feud, and that's on Hulu. It's on FX, but premieres on Hulu. Something just way out of the left field. At Crime Scene, we are eager to hear your feedback and suggestions for future episodes. You can follow Crime Scene on Twitter at Crime Scene RHAP. That's at Crime SEENRHAP. Or you can email us by sending emails to crimescenerhap@gmail.com.
We're also on TikTok at crime.scene and on other social media at Crime Scene Podcast. And please remember to subscribe to our feed, robhasawebsite.com/crime feed. It makes a big difference.
Jason, what do you got going on? Where can the people find you?
You can find me every week over on the A Perfect Match podcast, talking about the hot mess that is Married at First Sight. Both of you have been gracious enough to be guests on our podcast several times. I co-hosted with Asia Welch. If you've never seen Married at First Sight, it's a hot mess show where sometimes some of the grooms wish their bride would be gone girl. you can check me out there every week with my co-host Asia Welch. Yeah. You can also find me on Twitter at JAYR1085 for all my shenanigans and talk about nonsense, mostly going to be revolved around the Ravens for the next couple of weeks. Yes.
Very that. And Sarah, what do you have going on? Where can the people find you?
People can find me on Twitter, never X, at Sarah Carradine, if that's something they'd like to do, and all other social media as well. Over on Silent Podcast, I've just finished my coverage of The Traitors UK Season 2. What an incredible finale. And coming up, Annabelle and I will be covering Alone Australia Season 2. And, of course, I will be covering Australian Survivor Titans versus Rebels.
Nice.
Send in all your comments to me and I will happily listen. What about you, Murray? What have you got going on?
Well, every week, me and Matt Scott bring you the highlights of the week in wrestling. Again, we are having our biggest season ever. It is the road to WrestleMania. We will be in WrestleMania, and we are having great guests. If you're listening to this, we've already did our Royal Rumble coverage, and it was amazing. So make sure you go and support us. RobHasAWebsite.com/wrestlingfeed in order to subscribe. Also, over on The Connect on Post Show Recaps, me and Chappelle and our guest LaTanya have wrapped up our movie theater coverage. We've been covering some great Black movies over there. So you can go to postshowrecaps.com/The Connect in order to listen to everything we've done there.
We'll be taking a break next week and we will return the week after. That's Tuesday, the 13th of February, with our coverage of They Called Him Mostly Harmless. Watch it on Max from the 8th of February and send in your comments and questions.
Thanks to Jason Reed for joining us, Will from America for the theme music, and the whole RHAP team behind the scenes. Until next time, case
closed.